from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's prolific time zones, each and every one covered by this program, Coast to Coast AM, weekend version. Hey, I'm Art Bell. Great to be here to be escorting you through the weekend. It is my honor and privilege to do so. Actually, great to be here. The webcam tonight remains the soon-to-be-here Asia Rainbell. And it is funny when you put up a picture like that, you know, done by ultrasound, people see all kinds of things in it. Pictures of little guys, and it's kind of looking at, it's like looking at a cloud formation. You can see just about anything, and everybody has. Anyway, Asia will be here June 1st. It's getting very close to reality, folks. And Erin is a very young mom, and I'm a very old dad, and it's going to be quite something. We're probably going to be looking for a Filipina yaya. It's like a nanny, Filipina. Anyway, good evening. Let us look very quickly at the state of the world. Never good. A Navy Blue Angel jet crashed during an air show Saturday, plunging into a neighborhood of small homes and trailers and, of course, killing the pilot. Witnesses said the planes were apparently flying in formation during the show at the Marine Corps Air Station at about 4 p.m. One of them dropped below the trees and crashed, sending up clouds of smoke and obviously a lot of damage. That was in Buford, South Carolina. The internet activities of the Virginia Tech gunman provided more insight Saturday into how he might have plotted for the whole rampage. Revelations that he bought two ammunition clips on eBay, purchased two empty clips about 3 weeks before the attack in which Cho killed 32 people, then himself. The clips designed for one of the two types of handguns that he used. Mass shootings, the headline, more common since the 1960s. So for those of you who are saying, well, it's always been that way, uh-uh. Third headline in the AP News. Mass public shootings have become such a part of American life in recent decades that the most dramatic of them can be evoked from the simple collection of names like Luby's, Jonesboro, Columbine, and now, of course, Virginia Tech. The Fallujah City Council chairman, a critic of Al-Qaeda, who took the job after his three predecessors were assassinated, himself killed on Saturday. Latest blow in a violent internal Sunni struggle for control of an insurgent stronghold west of Baghdad. The U.S. Border Patrol's push to expand the number of agents on the lookout for illegal crossings has some current and former agents worried that the pressure is going to lead to corner cutting and will jeopardize the public safety, raising the Border Patrol's numbers from about 12,000 to 18,000 by the end of 2008 as a key element in the president's plan to improve security at our border. Crossed, of course, by tens of thousands of illegal immigrants each year. South Korea has decided to, despite North Korea's nuclear continuing ambitions, send food, specifically in the form of rice, south. And of course, then there was the gunman at Houston. Now we've learned a little more. The gunman, in an apparent murder-suicide at the Johnson Space Center, targeted a NASA worker that he feared could get him fired. Police said Saturday William Phillips had received a poor job review a month before authorities said he smuggled a revolver into the Space Center. You got to wonder how he did that. Shot David Beverly, barricaded himself with a hostage before killing himself in a building that houses communications and tracking systems for the space shuttle. One hostage escaped. You've just got to wonder how in the world he got a gun into what should be such a secure place. All right, in a moment, as Paul would say, the rest of the news. I really did think last night's discussion of what the hell is going on in our country and what's going wrong was exceptionally fruitful. A lot of really, really good quality calls during that program. And inevitably, when you discuss that kind of thing, you get people who are saying, oh, No, you know, people tend to think back in the 50s that it was better. Well, this headline, third headline here, suggests indeed it was, that these mass shootings are something that began, and I was kind of wondering about this last night, basically in the 1960s, the decade of the 1960s. So now we really know. Was it the beginning of the end? According to a Swedish physicist, global oil production is going to peak sometime between 2008 and 2018, then begin to decline, saying physicists have been right all along about this. In LiveScience.com, Melinda Wenner reports that since 1956, when American geophysicist M. King Hubert correctly predicted that U.S. oil reserves would hit a peak within 20 years, experts have debated when the same might occur globally. Swedish physicist Redrik Rabaius made a field-by-field analysis over of 300 giant oil fields in use today. Now, these account for about 60% of all oil production. He predicts the rate at which this production is going to decline by favoring the drop-off rates for similar fields, taking into consideration the new fields that are being developed now. U.S. physicist David Goldstein thinks that Rabaius's figures are correct, says oil geologists have gone to the ends of the earth in order to search out big fields. It's very unlikely another big one is going to be found. Even if a huge one should be found, it would only put off the peak by perhaps a year or so. Physicist Michael Lynch disagrees, says that just because we haven't found a major new oil source yet doesn't mean they don't exist. You don't go looking for them till you run out of the big fields. He thinks it's partly a perceptual problem. If I don't see it, it must not be there. While Rabaius suggests it isn't practical to rely on extracting oil in the future based on resources and technologies that haven't yet been developed or even discovered. There's no reason to assume that we'll have plenty of oil in the future without having any evidence whatsoever that that is the case. Also from Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country, due to global warming, low-lying Bangladesh may not have very much of a future at all. And if you live in a major coastal city, as many of us do, there could be a tsunami in your future. Agricultural researchers think that cities should protect themselves from tsunamis and hurricanes by planting shelter belts. You have a shelter belt. In The Independent, Anne McFerrin reports that the island of Aralia, which is part of the nation of Bangladesh, is one of the first drowning casualties of climate change. The rising ocean surrounding it has now reduced it to, get this, folks, one-fifth of its former size. The U.S. certainly is not immune to this kind of problem. Following the devastating aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and the December 2004 tsunami in Southeast Asia, many international planning agencies have searched for ways to prevent such tragedies in the future. Iowa researcher Gene Tackle, Mike Chen, developed a set of guidelines for rebuilding coastal forests in Thailand, where hundreds of bodies washed up on the beach after the 2004 tsunami. Much loss of life from this tsunami was attributed to destruction of coastal forests. Villages in India and Southeast Asia that preserve their coastal mangroves suffered far less damage. So the team suggests the following: plant as many trees close to the sea as possible, using short, salt-tolerant, and sparse shelters on the seaweed edge, using all species of high wind resistance on the landward side, and leaving gaps between rows and irregularly within the rows to extend the protected zone, but allowing for onshore flow of the cooling sea breeze in non-hazardous conditions. In other words, plant trees. So if something big and ugly comes your way, there'll be something to break it. All right, we're going to go to open lines, unscreened open lines, in just a moment. West of the Rockies, it's, are you ready? 800-618-8255. If you'd like to continue the discussion from yesterday, that's fine by me. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. If you're a first-time caller, You are a blessed, welcome person at area code 818-501-4721. And we have many wildcard lines for your use at area code 818-501-4109. Finally, if you're outside the country, perhaps an expat, you're welcome. We've got a toll-free line for you wherever in the world you are, 800-893-0903. That's 800-893-0903. Russia is doing something kind of interesting, perhaps a little worrisome. They are now constructing their first, by the way, of about six, floating nuclear power plants. That's right. Some may be sold to other countries. Environmental organizations have long criticized Russia's plans to build such plants, saying they're vulnerable to accidents on the high seas. But Russia has pushed forward with the program, justifying it as a way of bringing power to some of the country's most remote areas. The head of Russia's Atomic Energy Agency said that the plants are going to be safe. He said, this plant is much safer than atomic energy stations on the ground. I suppose the thinking is, you know, they had the Kursk, which sunk. And that reactor, they say, when they brought the Kursk up, was ready to go. Could have started it right up. Everything was well. So I suppose they think that if something goes wrong, the nuclear power station in question will simply sink. What do you think? Is that a good idea, or do you think that you suppose that's an idea that might use a little work yet? Can you imagine that, looking out on the ocean and seeing not an oil platform, but instead a nuclear power plant on the high seas? My, my, my. All right, let's do it. Going west of the Rockies, you are on the air.
Me?
You indeed.
Oh, great. Hi, Art. This is Marta. Hi. I'm from California.
Hi, Marta.
Hi. I have a question. I heard through YouTube William Cooper, who is in the video, there's he's saying, talking about a conspiracy, the JFK assassination conspiracy.
You're aware William Cooper passed away some time ago.
Yeah, but this is a video. This is a documentary video that was recorded some time ago.
And what about it?
Oh, I haven't heard much on your radio station about it.
I guess we haven't talked a whole lot about it. I appreciate the call, but there's no shortage of a JFK assassination videos, books. I would say, what do you think? Where does the JFK assassination rate in the world's top 10 conspiracies? In fact, it might be interesting to see a list of what people believe the top 10 conspiracies of the world are. I suppose 9/11 is definitely in the top 10, if not in the top three by now. That's very interesting. Kennedy would also certainly be in the top five. Maybe you could suggest some others. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. I want to bring up the alternate energy area for a minute. I have investigated the production of these transuranium elements, curium, americium, et cetera, and element 114 is it is valid what Bob Lazar is saying about the use of element 114, element 115. I called Dr. James Jost, who's the head of the UN agency on that's closely associated with this field, and he says that there's a blackout on that kind of information.
Okay, the only thing I know about the only thing I know about 115 is, of course, what Bob Lazar has said. And we now have actually developed element 115 since Bob Lazar told that story, but I'm told it is not stable at all.
Well, I think that there is. I know that people have said it on both sides of the issue that there is stability. The scientists have found that there is not stability. But I do think that there needs to be a complete release of information, as long as it doesn't hurt national security, on the use of those elements.
All right. Well, I'm certainly all for that. I don't know what the current status of 115 is. However, we'll get some scientists to look into it. For example, next hour, actually, we've got Jen Levin here. She is a professor of physics and astronomy at Barnard College of Columbia University. She's going to be talking to us about the university and whether it's really finite. I think she has a view that it is finite. That it is not finite. Actually, I don't know what her view is. That's why we've got her as a guest. We'll find out. Do you think the universe is infinite? I guess my view has always been that it probably is, but you just can't wrap your mind around it. Maybe she will find language that will enable us to think about that question. It's something you think about as a child. Does it just keep on going and going and going? Or do you eventually come back to your starting point, or what? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, my name is Paul, 71QO Shreveport, Louisiana. The absolute top conspiracy of all time has got to be the central banks that the Rothschilds, along with other international bankers, there are only five countries left in the world that do not have a Rothschild bank. They just got one in China. And, you know, it's amazing to me the way these elites think, because, I mean...
Are you sure you know how they think at all?
Well, I've been trying to, you know, do research and trying to really understand how they think. And I'm totally convinced it's like they justify what they do. They want to bring us utopia. You see, and they would argue that governments cannot bring us utopia, that only elite men can, because governments, all they want to do is get reelected, and the masses can't do anything. So they feel, it's like Moonraker, you know, it's like they feel like they have to bring utopia, that no one can do it except them. So that's how they justify taxing the people, and that's where your tax money goes. By the way, it's not the government.
The closest thing we have to utopia in the world right now is, where are you, sir?
Shreveport, Louisiana.
That's pretty close. Anywhere in the U.S. is as close to utopia as I think we're going to get on this earth in this lifetime.
Yeah, well, I'm just talking, you know, the far future here. I'm talking about, you know, that's how they think.
Anyway, you think that those elite represent one of the, or no, you said the greatest conspiracy. I don't know about that. Maybe we should construct a coast-to-coast AM top 10 conspiracies of the world. That's actually a pretty good idea, isn't it? This program has, where would aliens and UFOs and government, possible government knowledge of that rate? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art Bell.
That's true.
Yes, sir. Ever since I was in high school, you know, the shows on the, you know, infinity, you know, the universe. Like, when I had physical science class in high school and was going over all the atoms and, you know, chemistry and stoichiometry and all that, I had this theory that, you know, our universe is, you know, with the planets and everything, we were an atom of helium. Like, each planet is a neutron, the sun is the nucleus. I mean, and imagine, I mean, that would mean there's universes, you know, everywhere. I mean, everything that has matter, everything that has an atom would have, you know, would have a solar system in it. I mean, are there any books?
I kind of follow what you're saying, that we could just be, there could be an entire universe in the pen in front of me. That kind of deal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and
at the subatomic level, I'm sure that's absolutely true. Now, whether we're part of something like that or not, I don't know. It's kind of fun to contemplate that whole thing, isn't it? What are we part of? What are we really part of? Do we really know what we are? Or are we in this, well, kind of matrix? And we only think we know what we're all about, when the much greater truth is out there yet to be discovered, perhaps in a calculation as long as your thumb. We'll be right back. Remember, the instant I answer the phone, say you're on the air, turn your radio off. Otherwise, it'll be confusing for you. Here is some breaking news. Well, let's see. April 20th, it broke. Something that crashed back in 1947 has now been found. A B-25 bomber was conducting a government mission in 1947 when it crashed near Kelso, Washington. Some reports at the time said that plane carried a top-secret payload, and its crew included flying disc investigators. Since the crash, hundreds of people have searched for the wreckage. Well, last weekend, Jim Greer found it. Greer had spent 10 years scouring the Cascade foothills. He said he read reports the plane carried spacecraft parts, but he doesn't know anything about that. Parts of the wreckage will go to the Seattle Museum of Mysteries. We'll be right back. From Rock Hill, South Carolina, thinks the number one conspiracy in the world is organized religion. Maybe we will make a list. After all, it's what we deal with, right? Conspiracies. A great number of them. So that would carry some weight. The Coast to Coast top 10 conspiracies of the world. Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Art, I absolutely love your show, buddy.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Phil from Venice, Florida.
Yes, Phil.
One thing I wanted to ask you quick before I say what I really wanted to. Did you ever see the movie Lake House with Sandra Bullock?
As a matter of fact, recently saw it, yes.
Something you're interested in, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was a great movie. Hold on a second. I thought it was a great movie, since you asked. I saw it only about 2 weeks ago, and when I really sunk my teeth into the subject matter, I thought, man, that's the only thing I didn't understand was why did the little red thing come up for when the male showed up? It's the other way around.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're sending out a letter, the postman comes and he puts down the little red flag and takes your mail away. But if you have mail, the flag is down, not up.
Okay. I guess I didn't realize that either. But it was like this split second thing where they kept missing each other on this different plane. I thought it really, really fit the bill pretty neat. Just quick, you were talking about oil in Russia. I remember hearing something about they had refitted their drilling tools or something to go deeper and found that oil wells that they thought were dry actually had lots of oil as they went deeper. Do you remember anything about that or know
no.
any substance with that? Or
no. One of the conspiracies, though, might be the people who think that oil wells refill themselves, that if you leave them and come back some years later, they will have filled themselves up again from some mysterious source.
Okay, maybe that was it. And the other thing, just quick, is I still think the Kennedy thing is like the number one conspiracy. I'll never, ever believe that was just, one person.
You don't think that's been supplanted by the 9/11 thing?
I don't think so when it gets down to nitty-gritty. I don't think that many people believe that our government. And let me tell you something. I hate the Bush administration, but I don't think that I do think he's a good American. I just don't believe in him. I don't think he'd do his administration.
Actually, I'm with you.
Like that.
Yeah, I'm really with you. Thank you very much. I'm not particularly fond of President Bush, but I do not for one second. And basically, I do think he's a good American. And I don't for one second think that our government did this to itself, as many do, as some sort of conspiracy, I suppose, among the those who run the great war machine, so we could turn out more bullets and bombs and make more people money to go after enemies that really don't exist. I think that that's kind of what supports that theory. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Yes, my name's Harry. I'm calling from Texas. And
hey, Harry.
I want to make a comment about your subject last night as to why things are the way they are. And,
yes, sir.
I believe it's, and it's funny you mentioned the 60s, because I believe it started at that time. You know, our parents used to think it was terrible if we watched Elvis. He would have a terrible influence on the kids. Well, I don't agree with that, but I do agree that we're a product of what we see. And I think Hollywood has just inundated us with the most tasteless and violent things that, you know, kids are becoming desensitized, socially acceptable, to talk in the way that they do and to act the way they do.
Okay, well, I agree and disagree. I do think that we become desensitized to violence in the movies and on television, but I don't think that we become desensitized to the degree that we commit violence. In other words, we're desensitized in terms of seeing it, but it's a great big line between that and taking a gun and walking into a college dorm and dispatching 30-some-odd people.
Oh, I agree with you completely. And you know, there are sick minds that are out there that have always been out there, but here's one difference, I think. In years, you know, going years back, these kind of horrendous crimes were usually motivated by a personal desire, illicit desire, whether it's sex or revenge or money. And it seems like it's just recently these horrific killings that of people that, you know, maybe they don't even know, just for the sake of killing. If we remember now, that guy put a camera on him, apparently, and videotaped. Well, that's just like the video games that he probably played. It's a first-person view. So he either intended to review that tape if he survived, or he wanted to have his mark in time by creating the ultimate video, violent video. And I think the media really played into his hands. It perpetuates itself because we make, in their eyes, they're famous. And
okay, I do agree with you that NBC made an error in judgment, in my opinion, in airing that material. They shouldn't have aired it. And then, of course, everybody pretty well followed along. I don't think that should have been aired, but that's just a personal opinion. And, of course, the First Amendment supports their having done that. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is Patrick from Virginia.
Yes, sir.
I'm calling about a topic last night. You were talking about how society in general changes, has changed. And I think tonight you guys are touching on a little bit about being in the, starting in like the 60s and whatnot. But I'm a police officer out here in Virginia, and I deal with a lot of people on a, you know, face-to-face basis. And I think you nailed it last night when you said with the technological advances, you know, we're starting to have a lot of problems. And the way I'm looking at it is that I think a lot of times when we see each other face-to-face, there's a checks and balances involved there. And
boy, I'll tell you, sir, that's exactly it. You've hit it right on the head, or you're pointing out that I did. I think that technology today allows us to become loners. It allows us to sit at home and write nasty little things about other people, not have to sign our name for it, not have to take responsibility, and not have to face somebody eye to eye, which is what the world used to be.
Exactly. And whereas if you did something wrong in a normal community or in commune style, you know, existence, there would be people there to either correct you or condemn you or help you or guide you. And
right.
When you're alone and isolated, there's nobody there to help. You either put you on the right path or tell you you're doing the wrong thing or knock it off and whatnot. And I think you're exactly right. With society being the way it is, you can literally exist by yourself in your own make-believe world, and there's nobody there to keep you on track.
All right, there you are. That's a police officer, and I think he's exactly right. This is what I tried to get through last night. This new wonderful technological world that we have does have a downside. And that's it. Have you ever noticed when they go to interview people, whenever there is, you know, a mass murder of this kind, inevitably they interview everybody who knew them. They interview the family, of course, but they interview neighbors, anybody else who might have known this person, and always, every time. Well, You know, I hardly noticed him. He was a loner. He never said very much of anything to anybody. That's always the case. But he sure was on the internet a lot, wasn't he? East of the Rock, no, make that west of the Rockies. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Ralph. Ralph from Long Beach, California.
Yes, Ralph.
I want to talk about the oil and oil.
Okay.
I used to work for a big oil company for 16 years. I blended the oil for the whole West Coast and charged the marine terminal and so
right.
on. They told me in the 90s that we had one of the most biggest oil reserves out there in Louisiana, and the oil does fill back up.
Well, I know that in Louisiana and Texas and Oklahoma, many areas in the Midwest, we capped wells some time ago. I thought that was kind of a wise move. Might as well use foreign oil for as long as we can get it. And if it ever becomes profitable to do so, and with today's oil prices, we may be about there. It would be time to reopen those wells.
Well, the thing is that the companies, it only costs 62 cents to make, and they're jacking the price up so high. We used to turn the blenders down just to raise the price up, 15 cents.
Huh.
And the oil industry doesn't want people to know about it. It's getting out of hand.
What are you paying for gas where you are now?
I pay over $3. I'm over here in L.A., California, and so we're paying, you know, $3.20. But the manufacturer's right here in our backyard. I worked in the refinery over here. For, you know, the corporation manager was for one of the big CEOs, he was my boss. And oil doesn't come from dinosaurs. It comes from the molten. I was told that in the 90s. I used to go to blending classes.
You know, I've always kind of doubted that oil was a result of all the dinosaurs having died. And I don't think I buy that.
It's a farce. The only reason they couldn't get to the deep well is because they didn't have the technology. Now they do. In fact, the gentleman said about Kazakhstan, I was supposed to go there, but I didn't get a chance to get to go there in Russia.
Yes.
They have found the biggest oil reserve because they did retool and they're going deep welling. In fact, one of the corporations was caught for doing horizontal drilling and tapping into one of the other competitors. They go, you know, you're talking about, you know, 5, 6, 8 miles deep.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize how the oil industry is ripping people off. I mean, I was there. I blended it. I was in charge of the whole West Coast. We used to pump all the way down to Arizona and truck it back.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I know that Russia has a great many reserves, and I think a lot of American companies now are beginning to go to Russia, and they're trying to build an infrastructure to get the oil out of there. We're certainly going to continue, no matter what happens, we're going to continue to need great amounts of oil until something else comes along, and then we have an infrastructure to get it all running. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. The Russian thing with the floating nuclear reactors, I think it would behoove us to develop something similar to that, but that it actually resides on the ocean or other bottom about 400 feet where men and rather unprotected can dive to, and nearly everything in nature, the storms and the tsunamis go over you, and you got this constant temperature, tremendous cooling power. The only real problem is the cables coming out of there. But
okay, but that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about floating these on the surface of the ocean, not under.
I understand. I'm saying that the real improvement would be have something like a barge that you could tow to any place, but deliberately as a partial submarine, sink it to a bottom about 400 feet. And this would give you every advantage except one. And we solve that every day on the oil rigs. The cables, the electric cables supplying the customer, would be entirely underwater. But I
think that's doable. Your idea is not bad. It would be interesting to talk to somebody in the business to find out what they think about that idea. Actually putting an atomic power plant under the ocean. Now, I'm not enough of a scientist to shoot holes in that idea, but it does seem to have some merit. As he points out, you'd have to get the output of the plant up on land, right? But otherwise, you've got built-in cooling all around you. You've got protection from disaster. That's not to say there wouldn't be an ecological disaster if something happened. I don't know. I'd have to think about that, run it by somebody in science, but it sounds like the idea has some merit. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Yes, Art, this is Steve from Tulsa.
Yes, sir.
And I had a couple of questions from your show a couple of weeks ago from Todd Standing, if you had any new information on that.
Well, I haven't spoken to him since the show. What about it?
Well, like anything from bugs or any new developments there.
I have had no requests to put them together, and I've been kind of holding my breath, wondering if Todd Standing would want to be in touch with Bugs, but so far, uh-uh.
Okay, and his videos are not available, is that right?
You're talking about Todd?
Yes.
He's doing individual showings at movie theaters. Now, where he's going beyond that, I don't know. No, I don't think they're privately available.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And I think I would, if both desired it, put them together. I have had no such request as of yet. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was just listening to that gentleman talking about 9/11. Were y'all aware that it was on, it's in Jeremiah 30 of the Bible?
No, I was not aware.
You weren't aware? Oh,
no.
Anyway, he explains the whole thing. God says, because we have turned our back on him, he said he allowed this. And he says, when he hears from us, he'll heal our land. And everybody needs to go to Jeremiah 30. It tells the whole thing.
It does.
Yep.
How, in other words, that would be prophecy that was written long, long ago, right?
Mm-hmm. This was supposed to happen.
And how do you connect it to 9/11? Specifically,
because it was it says taking down of the cedars of Lebanon and raising the cedars of Lebanon. I mean, taking down the sycamore trees and raising of the cedars of Lebanon. That's what they call it. And God calls GW king of the north, Bin Laden king of the south, and this is a battle between the tribes.
I see. All right. Well, thank you very much. Seems to me you've got to do an awful lot of attaching of meaning to different things to get there and do that. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Hello, how's it going, Art?
It's fine, sir.
Yes, I have a conspiracy that I've wanted to talk to you about for a long time that's really bothering me.
I'm listening.
Seth from SETI?
Yes.
You know, he's talking about how he has never heard or they haven't had any contact or anything like that of any kind. No signals or anything yet. Remember when that one report came out that there were signals, and that, all of a sudden another report came out again that there were not any signals. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Well, you know, anybody who listened to your show, which I have for 5 years, almost straight, and, 10 total, would know that there's all kinds of people who have been abducted and all these things going on, yet Seth says there's absolutely nothing that they've heard about or that he believes in any way, shape, or form. And I just feel like this guy is a plant. I think that he is there on purpose to deflect people's questions, and that there really are many, many signals, probably an overwhelming amount of signals. That's why they have a guy like Seth saying, oh, we haven't had any signals or anything going on of any kind.
Well, to some degree, Seth has his own agenda. In other words, he receives money, mostly private sector, certainly not government money now, to look for signals from elsewhere. Well, if there are abductions going on, and if they are here, then we don't really need to be listening for them there, do we?
No, we don't. And it seems to me like the new acronym, I think, for SETI would be Simulated Extraterrestrial Investigation.
Huh.
Because
simulated, huh?
If you think about it.
I don't go that far at all, and I think SETI is doing a wonderful job. The only place that I disagree with their philosophy is that if a signal was received, a substantial, here we are, listen to us kind of signal, Seth says it would be immediately public. I have strong, very strong doubts about that, but that's something Seth and I have disagreed on for a very long time. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, get ready. The universe comes next.